Bye-bye.
And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, your uncensored, unsolicited, and in some cases unwanted radio station, but we want you, so give us a call at 427-3772. Lines are open, and as soon as we get our poo-poo together here, don't want to use too many mind-numbing obscenities on the air, we will give you a little more music. You're dealing with a man who just does not know how to use the CD machine. Whoa, that's a problem. There we go. Here's a little something to hold us over. And then we'll get on to Yugoslavia for a brief break.
We got a new administration. They say it's time for celebration. Everybody's so ecstatic about a Democratic, come on. After the Reagan and Bush years, and the space between Danny Boy's ears, anything is better than the same old song. Oh, and Mr. Bill is such a nice guy. You just know he wouldn't lie to you. He's got charisma, they say, he's like JFK. He's got a hip vice president. He's into the environment. He wrote a book about it once, so I know he's gonna mean what he say. Roll out the red carpet for the 90s. Roll it out and let it flow. Roll out the red carpet for the 90s. Here we go. Here we go. Now he came to my hometown. They gave him lights and sound. And they were playing John Lennon as he got out of his limousine. And as he spoke to the multitudes, all the necessary platitudes, they were rounding up the homeless so there wouldn't be a negative scene. Now there was nary a dry eye, seeing the Savior with the necktie. All that saint salvation and repentance. Oh, but I gotta agree, you know it's a miracle to me. First president we've had in 12 years who can't speak a complete sentence. Roll out the red carpet for the 90s. Roll it out and let it flow. Roll out the red carpet for the 90s. Here we go. Here we go. Now he's fast food fed. He likes the Grateful Dead. He was against the war in Vietnam, or at least so I'm told. He gets down to the bone. He even plays the saxophone. And he's wanted to be president since he was 10 years old. Now he's into higher education. You know that's a recommendation. He was a Rhodes Scholar, so you know he's got a high IQ. He smoked a little pot once. They talked about it for months. Oh, but he never inhaled. He didn't know that's what you were supposed to do. Roll out the red carpet for the 90s. Roll it out and let it flow. Roll out the red carpet for the 90s. Here we go. Here we go. Now they're such a pretty first family. I saw them lighting up the Christmas tree. Just the kind of people I'd like to have for my next door neighbors. Oh, well, they don't play by the same rules. Their kids go to private schools. So I guess I'll just have to read about them in the daily papers. Now you might think I'm crazy, oh, but I get a little hazy when I think about the rock and roll future of our nation. Is it just coincidental? Or am I going mental? They put Elvis Presley on a stamp just in time for the inauguration. Roll out the red carpet for the 90s. Roll it out and let it flow. Roll out the red carpet for the 90s. Here we go. Here we go. Oh, now I know what you're thinking. I see your eyeballs blinking. You're thinking I'm too cynical, I ought to have a little more faith. Well, faith is to your credit, but just watch out where you put it, or you'll fall for a figurehead with a friendly face. It's happened before. Now I'll tell you, if you ask me, the real democracy comes from the bottom up and not the top down. Now there's a storm on the horizon, and we can see the waters are already rising. And if we don't learn how to swim for ourselves, you know we're all gonna drown. Roll out the red carpet for the 90s. Roll it out and let it flow. Roll out the red carpet for the 90s. Here we go. Here we go. Carpet for the 90s, roll it out and let it flow. Roll out the red carpet for the 90s, here we go. Here we go.
And there we went with Jim Page. Roll out the red carpet for the 90s, as we end the 90s, as we end the decade, as we end the century, and as we end the millennium. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. Lines are open for those of you who want to call in, 427-3772. And now, without further ado, here's an article by Richard Norton Taylor Peter Capella. War in Kosovo cost more than $75 billion. Actually, that's $50 billion U.S. billion. The Kosovo War cost more than $50 billion U.S. According to the most comprehensive analysis so far, the military, economic, and human impact of the conflict. The figure does not take into account, as yet, unmeasured environmental damage. Two-thirds of the total estimated cost of the war will be needed to rebuild Yugoslavia, including Kosovo, making it 10 times more expensive to reconstruct the country than to bomb it. The cost breakdown came as the United States Defense Secretary, Mr. William Cohen, admitted in a report to Congress on the bombing campaign that U.S. electronic eavesdropping and attack aircraft were stretched thin against a formidable Serb air defense. Top U.S. civilian and military officials also told Congress this week, the story is dated October 16th, that Allied forces were too slow in choosing targets, that the U.S. seriously underestimated how many precision-guided munitions would be needed, that NATO should have kept alive the option of a ground invasion, and that the war was fought with too much reliance on American forces. The Serb Army's ability to maintain its air defenses against the NATO bombing showed the U.S. must improve its electronic combat power for future wars, Mr. Cohen added. The Serbs successfully husbanded most of their best air defense weapons, prompting NATO commanders to keep Allied attack aircraft at higher altitudes, thus reducing their effectiveness against ground targets, he surmised. Despite this, Mr. Cohen described the war over Serbia as a, quote, very decisive victory. Without referring to lapses, such as NATO's bombing of the Chinese embassy in Belgrade, Mr. Cohen said that this had been accomplished by carrying out the most precise, quote, unquote, air campaign in history and one with the fewest civilian deaths or injuries. Now that's a new one. The figures on the cost of the Kosovo War were compiled with the help of Jane's Defense Weekly for an audit of war to be shown in Britain on BBC television today. They reveal that it cost NATO $9.6 million U.S. dollars to bomb one bridge over the Danube. It will cost the U.S. $16 million to replace it. And NATO spent an estimated $9.6 million bombing the Zvezda car plant in southern Serbia. Rebuilding it will cost an estimated $75 million. NATO countries engaged in the Kosovo campaign say they spent more than $4 billion over 78 days, during which their aircraft dropped more than 23,000 bombs and missiles. On the first night of the war, NATO launched more than $71 million worth of weapons, including cruise missiles costing more than $3 million apiece, against Yugoslav military bases. During the first week of the bombing, aviation fuel alone cost $240 million. According to the independent G17 group of Serb economists, damage to the country's industry amounted to $2.8 billion. Yugoslavia lost 44% of industrial production and is now the poorest country in Europe. 10 million people face a threat to their water supplies, according to the BBC study, and 500,000 landmines and 10,000 unexploded bombs remain to be cleared. On Thursday, the United Nations appealed to NATO to take immediate action to provide information on the use of depleted uranium weapons. NATO has confirmed that anti-tank shells fired by U.S. Thunderbolt aircraft each contain 275 grams of depleted uranium. This is a radioactive and chemically toxic material that upon impact may turn into a mobile aerosol, according to a report for the European Commission by a regional environmental center for Central and Eastern Europe. Many of the compounds released can cause miscarriages and birth defects. Others are associated with fatal nerve and liver diseases, it said. This is from the New York Times and the Guardian. And this is interesting because about a month ago they were telling us that, oh, there's no problem with depleted uranium weapons, something that I heard a very good presentation from, and I guess a number of people in this community did, from Paul Sullivan when he was here in early June talking at the Veterans Hall here in Santa Cruz. Again, this is another series of big lies from the Army and the government. Depleted uranium weapons are nice because they cut through tanks like butter. The only problem is they stay around for, is it millions or billions of years? I don't know. The half-life of the isotope involved is immense. Here's another story. Clinton opposes a plan by allies to give Serbs aid, by Stephen Lee Myers. This one is compliments of Shana, who may be giving us a call on the air. I'm hoping she's listening, and I'm sorry this is a bit late. We had hoped she'd be between 11:30 and 12, and as you can see, we're between 12 and 12:30, but hopefully Shana will stay with us and call in at 427-3772 and give us the update. Shana is one of the most well-informed people on Yugoslavia that I know in this area, and actually puts stuff out on the email almost daily on information you can't get in the mainstream press. With winter fast approaching, the United States and its allies are deeply divided over whether to increase the isolation of Yugoslavia and its leader, Slobodan Milosevic, or to offer some aid to ease the hardship of Serbs in the hope of encouraging a more vital opposition. On the eve of a meeting Monday of the European Union's 15 foreign ministers in Luxembourg, actually that was a week ago, the Clinton administration has outlined its strong opposition to plans by the group to provide heating oil and other aid to certain Yugoslav cities controlled by opposition parties, American and European officials said. Under the program, the European Union would initially supply two cities with about $5 million in heating oil to help cope with shortages caused by the destruction of Yugoslavia's petroleum refineries during NATO's air war over Kosovo. That aid would be a first part of a broader package that would eventually include food, medicine, and even small-scale public works projects, European officials said. But American officials here said they feared the assistance could shore up Milosevic by alleviating public discontent, which they hope could lead to protests in Yugoslavia, early elections, and or even Milosevic's ouster or resignation. Secretary of State Madeleine K. Albright has laid out the Clinton administration's objections in a series of discussions with her European counterparts, including Foreign Secretary Robin Cook of Britain and Foreign Minister Jascha Fischer of Germany. We're concerned about proposals that may have appropriate humanitarian goals, but may lead to developments that directly or indirectly support the regime, the State Department spokesman James P. Rubin said. This dispute over providing aid highlights the dilemma facing the United States in the wake of NATO's air war over Kosovo last spring, which left Milosevic politically battered but still clinging to power. The quarrel also underscores Washington's philosophical differences with the Europeans over how to further isolate and weaken Milosevic's government. While the United States has said it supports aid to relieve the suffering of ordinary Serbs, it has ruled out any aid for reconstruction in Yugoslavia as long as Milosevic remains in power. Many American allies in Europe, however, view things differently. The Europeans don't necessarily see isolation as the only way to do away with the Milosevic, said Ivo Dadler, a former National Security Council aide who now studies the Balkans for the Brookings Institution. The administration wants to keep the pressure on, he added. They're afraid, one, that if you divide the Allies from us, Milosevic will exploit these divisions, and secondly, that the Allies are weaker than we are, as on Iraq and Iran, and will undermine the sanctions. These are the sanctions, of course, that have killed, 5 million children in Iraq in the last 10 years. Since the war ended, Yugoslavia has remained under strict sanctions that prohibit trade, even as millions of dollars of aid is poured into Kosovo, which is technically still a province of Serbia, but increasingly is being administered by the United Nations as a separate entity. The sanctions against Yugoslavia, coupled with NATO's destruction of bridges, refineries, and factories, have caused the country's already feeble economy to collapse. There are shortages of food, and spiraling inflation is making even basic items unaffordable for many. In a report on September 20th, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said that as winter sets in, Serbia faces severe shortages of electricity, heating oil, and coal. Electricity supplies, it warned, could fall 40 to 50% below its requirements as winter progresses. The overall impact of such shortages is expected to be increasing morbidity and mortality. That's sickness and death, folks. Particularly in urban areas, the report said. The most vulnerable will be the elderly, the very young, the sick, and the urban poor. And those are surely the United States' most important opponents. Forgive my sarcastic asides. It's hard to avoid them. Rubin said the United States, based on its own analysis, does not believe that the energy shortage will be substantial, but the Europeans have shown more willingness to consider ways to respond to the warnings. The European Union has been trying to tailor a relief program that would not directly support Milosevic, who has been charged with war crimes by the International Tribunal in The Hague. During a meeting last month, the group's humanitarian office pledged roughly $40 million in aid. European officials said they planned to provide aid only if they could guarantee it would not end up in the hands of Milosevic's government. The $5 million worth of heating oil being considered under the initial plan would, for example, go to two cities in southeastern Serbia, Niš and Pirot, which are governed by opponents of Milosevic's ruling Socialist Party. Dalibor said such plans have potential downsides, especially since energy-like money can be easily diverted to the central government. These localities don't have real power other than political power, he said. They don't have police or security power. How do you assure it doesn't get stolen or simply taken away? At their meeting in Luxembourg, the foreign ministers are expected to discuss ways to ensure that Milosevic's central government could not redirect the assistance, something Dr. Albright demanded in her discussions with them. They're sure to prove they are democratic forces, or they have to prove they're democratic forces, one European diplomat said, and we have to be sure that these funds are not siphoned off to the government and so forth and so on. So this is a story in, apparently it's October 11th by Stephen Lee Myers. Clinton opposes a plan by allies to give Serbs aid, and unfortunately the byline of this story, that is the New York Times. That's a New York Times story. Well, I'm hoping that one of our informed correspondents will call in shortly, and let's give them a chance to call in with another brief musical break.
These years beating my head on the wall, stumbling in the blind alleys, being fodder for a fall. I must have thought I was eternal the way I spun my wheels. Oh, but this time is different, this time is for real. And more than anything else in the world, than anything else in the world, and more than anything else in the world, I can't let you down. I can't let you down. Oh, when I was much younger, and I was on my roll, I gave my life away in pieces, life was out of my control. Illusions of reality, how they whisper in a double talk, Oh, but this time I make my move, I'll know which way to walk. And more than anything else in the world, anything else in the world, more than anything else in the world, I can't let you down. I can't let you down. Say that life is like a river, I think they might be right. I know the shadowy illusions disappear in the morning light. All things are possible now, the future is in view. And when today becomes tomorrow, well, I will think of you. And more than anything else in the world, anything else in the world, more than anything else in the world, I can't let you down. I can't let you down. And more than anything else in the world, anything else in the world, more than anything else in the world, I can't let you down.
In the world, actually, that's exactly what the song is called from his album by the same name, More Than Anything Else in the World. However, what we have now is Jane Bear from a particular part of the world, the beach area or beach flats. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Jane, you've been an activist with a number of groups, but I guess you're active in the beach. Give us the name of the group.
I'm in the Beach Flats Neighborhood Association. I'm also in the Beach Area Working Group. Both organizations work to improve the quality of life for the animals and humans here by the main beach, Santa Cruz. And, of course, we had the factor of having an amusement park right along the beach that complicates matters for both marine animals and local humans.
Particularly low-income humans. I guess you narrowly averted a complete demolition of, what, a third of your neighborhood last year when you defeated council candidates who wanted to pass Canfield's beach boardwalk expansion?
That's correct. The concept there was to demolish low-income folks' homes and on the site have expansion for the amusement park, kind of a theme park taking over the natural sensitive wildlife area that is a harbor seal rookery and so forth. That is the estuary itself of the San Lorenzo River and the Pacific Ocean.
Well, I know that. Sorry, go ahead.
And to that end, we fought the what was termed the Third Street realignment, which was a taking and demolishing of people's houses who live there.
Well, I know that recently there's been, I guess earlier this year, you were very concerned about a planned demolition of the Dolphin and Lee apartment complexes, out of which came a lot of the Hispanic protesters or people who were willing to speak up around the beach boardwalk plan last fall. And I guess you took this issue to SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, and their housing committee to a number of their meetings. And I guess you also proposed your own alternate plan. Instead of spending $5 million in relocation fees and destroying existing housing, you suggested that Canfield housing that is currently laying vacant or deteriorated or maybe even Canfield property that should be built on be purchased and that there be additional housing added. And you called that, was that the Olinda project?
That's right. The Olinda is the old Ohlone name
know that you attended one of the meetings. I guess there's a large trailer, a community trailer, where sometimes there are these meetings held on these issues almost across from your house.
Yes.
And you were at one of those meetings, which you reported on 3 or 4 months ago, and you were kind of concerned about the new council members, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar, who I guess some or all of whom were at that meeting. And you contacted Fitzmaurice afterward, asking that they consider things other than the Dolphin Lee project, possibly going directly to Canfield. And I know that, I guess, SCAN did do a somewhat, they muted their, you had feared that they were going to actually just endorse the Dolphin Lee project. Instead, they came out with a request for affordable housing that included a number of options, including your proposal for the Olinta project and the Dolphin Lee and a couple of other ones as possibilities. And they had a meeting, I guess, last week, did SCAN, and then the city council members also met in the trailer again on Wednesday. Can you give us an update on those two meetings?
Well, they description of the proposals was put together by Mercy Housing, who is the main thrust behind the Dolphin Lee project, but they are the city's housing corporation who does their housing studies, etc. So I guess since they're funded to do such studies of situations, one shouldn't complain that they were in fact the people that put together the study. However, it was kind of peculiar in a certain way, because of course they were going to slant it towards the project that they wish to build and get the money to build and have
so you said
work for them themselves
did,
to do.
They did come out with a study then.
Yeah, they did. They came out with the alternates. However, they framed it in such a way that the Seaside Company property, and it is not all Seaside Company, there's a couple other property owners, but it's thought to be boardwalk owned. Vacant land that used to be where residential homes and apartments were fairly recently. Those proposals were framed in such a way that it looks to a person who's not intimately involved with the situation that the Dolphin Lee would be a superior project because it would provide more apartments. However, what they did on a site that was the original site of a place called Lindy Court along 3rd Street by 3rd and Beach Street is they minimized the amount of land that they were studying while it was just an arbitrary choice to make a small plot where they could have had any amount of that land in their study of whether this was
comparative
study. If anybody knows about what's called the soccer field or the grassy lot there at
they probably don't.
They did a little teeny section of that. Well, they could have studied the whole thing.
Let me understand that. So the monopoly, the service provider that has its own project, was asked to do the so-called objective study to consider all the projects?
Yes. And so therefore, their conclusion was, for instance, they only get 18 units on the grassy lot. Well, of course, they could get about 120 units if they wanted to, if they wanted to propose the whole property had to be built upon.
Well, now,
they just chose 18 units.
So
they said, well, you have to have 20 units before you get tax credit, so that's not as good of a project.
So
in other words, it was framed in such a way that
Jane,
the casual observer would look
right,
at it.
Right, right. This report came out, at the SCAN meeting earlier this week, or it came
it
out?
It came out at the day of the city councilor, Tim Fitzmaurice, actually called the meeting in the trailer.
The trailer meeting, that was, of course, I guess after the SCAN meeting.
Yes.
Another
difficulty I had with it was they postulated that land would be more expensive. The Dolphin Lee is very, very expensive project because there would be so much displacement of the now obligated to find replacement housing, to provide replacement housing, and it couldn't.
Yeah, plus
frankly, they couldn't really do it for the people that are living there.
The
now
people,
they'd be jacked
plus,
out,
plus
but they'd
the,
have replacement.
Plus the people could never get back in because
that's
the rents would be higher by that time and so forth.
That's correct.
But let me
so
ask
it
you.
Would be a very much more expensive
right.
project.
You know,
but they postulated that the other site would be comparably expensive or more expensive than it might be because the Seaside Company sometimes uses it as overflow parking, where my point was it's only used 5 days a year maximum for just a few cars, that particular site. Well, they had written in the analysis that the city would have to provide, or the company would have to...
The problem, what you're telling me, Jane, is that what we really need is to see this document summarized. I think it's kind of difficult for people to see it as you're describing it, you know, verbally. It's kind of hard. But I guess what I want to hear from you is, did you get to these two meetings, the SCAN meeting and the...
I didn't get to the SCAN meeting. I just got to the Tim Fitzmaurice meeting.
Can you tell us about that meeting? And was there a big turnout? Did many people from the community turn out?
No, there are very few people from the neighborhood. Let's see. A handful, you know, 5 or 6 people.
And what was the purpose of this meeting? Just simply to present this report, or?
Yes, it was to present the report and get feedback. And it was pointed out that for the amount of expenditure that the Dolphin Lee would entail, that is moving people out, replacement housing funds, et cetera, no one showing up saying that they they are in dire need to have their housing replaced and want to get moved out or anything. You know, there wasn't a real need for...
Do they have a timetable now for this, or have they reached any decisions?
Well, there's supposed to be a decision this Tuesday, that's October 19th, on the general subject of whether they should move forward on a project in the Beach Flats. And
are they specifying Dolphin Lee, or are there other projects?
Well, they're not going to specify Dolphin Lee yet, but my sense of it from comments made is that and the way that the study was put out, it seemed to slant the whole decision towards the Dolphin Lee. For example, they postulated that the Seaside Company land would be expensive because they would have to find replacement parking. Well, the neighbor's point is that the Seaside Company should have never been using commercial uses in a residentially zoned area anyway. So why do they have to provide replacement when...
We got to keep on Charlie's good side.
Yes. And, of course, there is the factor that there's the Tidelands issue coming down, and so it's an extremely awkward time in my reckoning to do this kind of negotiating with the Seaside Company. It's true they are buying up and emptying out and demolishing apartments and homes and Beach Flats, and it's appalling. There's an apartment complex that they've just finished emptying out, and
where is that?
That is Rex Apartments at 133 LeBrant, mm-hmm. And that's in danger of getting I think it's called condemned by neglect, something like that, where they just let it alone. And then there's other issues that.
How long was the meeting, by the way?
Oh, it was a couple of hours.
And were you there for all of it?
Yes.
And did anyone speak about your proposed, I guess, Rex Court Olita plan?
That was kind of
that's a plan to buy additional housing from Canfield,
yes.
Or to get acquired by eminent domain.
Yes.
And then to use it instead of destroying existing housing, to add to housing, and instead of building kind of block housing projects, which have not been too successful, to allow kind of family residences.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Well, it was poorly analyzed, as I was trying to explain.
Was it discussed?
It wasn't really conceived as a realistic option, and I made the point that if they're not going to buy property anything because we really don't want people to be displaced. So, you know, if it's an awkward time to make real estate deals with the seaside company because of this other state issue on the tidelands, then okay. So
and that issue, of course, is the reclaiming of property from the seaside company, which they have held, but which the city it believes is city property, right?
That's correct, because it's within the high tide line of the estuary, the San Lorenzo River and Pacific Ocean Estuary.
Which council members were at this meeting on Wednesday at the trailer in the beach flats?
It was Tim Fitzmaurice's meeting, and it was the other ones who stopped in briefly were Michael Hernandez and Christopher Crown.
Did there seem to be any sentiment for proposals other than the Dolphin Lee proposals?
Well, there was analysis. As I tried to express, I felt that the analysis of going to Seaside Company and making offers to purchase property that should be new residential in the footprint of what recently was residential, rather than letting that to within a residential area go towards commercial or parking of overflow cars. So few days a year, that concept wasn't spelled out as if it was a realistic concept, and it wasn't presented in such a way that it was obvious there was twice as many houses they could get out of. You know, it wasn't analyzed in a positive way.
Now, you say there's another, I guess, a sort of a city council housing hearing coming up on Tuesday.
That's correct.
When is that?
It's at the regular city council meeting. It's on the agenda.
It's what, 3 o'clock or 7 o'clock?
No, it's in the evening.
In the evening at 7 o'clock, and down at the 809 Center Street across from the library.
That's correct.
And are you going to be going to that meeting?
Yes, and I'd like to reiterate the point, if people could make this, that if it's not returning the residential area to being residential, you know, by adding more units, then the two points that property should be taking from the commercial and put back in residential, which it belongs, and that people don't need to, should not be displaced.
Any sign of Andy Schifrin, Don Lane, or other Mercy Housing personnel?
No.
Although I must say that Lane has denied he's involved in any of that, by the way.
Well, I guess Scott Graham must have been postulating that.
Yeah, so we apologize to Don for misinformation around that. We're talking to Jane Baer, a community activist in the Beach Flats area. I guess if you want to talk to her more, you can give her a call. Is that, you want to give out your number on this?
Okay, 423-0170.
And you can also talk to her at the Tuesday City Council meeting.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get David Silva, or another one of the SCAN insiders, to give us a call and let us know how the SCAN Housing Committee, and I guess they had a land trust meeting too.
Yeah, sounds real exciting.
That was like a week ago or 2 weeks ago. Anyway, thank you very much,
Jen.
Right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yes, hi. I'm calling regarding the update of the situation in Yugoslavia.
Oh, good. Okay, you want to sign in? What's your name?
My name is Sveto.
One more time?
Sveto.
Sveto?
Yeah.
And Sveto, you're a Santa Cruzan, or?
Yes, I do live in Santa Cruz currently, but I'm originally from Yugoslavia.
Ah, so you just happened to tune in to Free Radio, or are you a regular listener?
Well, actually, a friend of mine has recommended, called me. I've been following your program for weeks now.
Okay.
And I have to say that I've heard a lot of good material.
Ah, well, that's good. Yeah, I think we both know who the friend is, probably. But let's see, what can you tell us? What were your reactions to what you heard, or what new information do you have?
Well, first of all, let me just say, for all people who are interested in actually more or less up-to-date information, there is a very good website that is bilingual, so it's in English as well as Serbian. That's www.belgrad.com, and they have a very good source of information directly from Kosovo, as well as a collection of articles and regarding the war and the whole situation over there. And the latest information that I've got...
Again, that's www.belgrade.com.
Yes, that's correct.
Go ahead.
The latest information that I have, for example, last night, we know that there is some commotion last couple of days in Kosovska Mitrovica, where the town is separated between the Serbian and Albanian side. Well, just last night there was a mortar attack originating from the Albanian side into a Serbian town, and there are several KFOR soldiers wounded, which is, again, the information I was not able to verify on any of the wire services here in the United States.
KFOR soldiers, again, are the UN or the NATO force that's occupying?
There is French NATO peacekeeping force in that town, and it should be four French NATO soldiers are wounded in this attack, and presently they have over 20 transporters and tanks and whatnot, and the helicopters flying all over there. So it's more or less, you can call it a war zone, a little war zone over there, which is, again, we don't hear much about it unless some Albanians happen to be killed.
Although there have been some stories, well, there recently have been a number of stories about how Serbians are getting the sharp end of the blade in terms of, you know, the mass ethnic cleansing or the driving of Serbians out of Albania that seems to be happening. Even a few of the mainstream media have covered that a little bit, I know.
A little bit. I think it's an understatement. It's
right.
Actually on a microscopic coverage of the ethnic cleansing, or how some Western media in Europe calls it reversed expulsion or reversed ethnic cleansing. Let me just tell you, there was a little over 200,000 Serbs living in Kosovo
now
in a pre-war situation.
Now they're 40,000 or so? Or?
Actually, currently, out of 65,000 in Pristina, which is the capital, there is only about 2,000 Serbs left.
Wow. So what would you estimate to be the population in Kosovo of Serbs left?
The total population of Kosovo Serbs is estimated at about 20 to 30,000.
I see.
At this time. Also, there is an information that about 3 weeks ago, the very last Jewish family was expelled from Pristina, and their complete the apartment and everything they had was confiscated by so-called KLA members.
How do Jews fare in Albania, do you know? You know much about Albania as a country? Or?
Well, Albania is mostly agricultural country that it's very poor, it's very undeveloped, and it's basically, essentially, since the coup that happened several years ago and the change of government, it's been ruled mostly by, from what I understand, by some kind of mafia organization, some kind of clans.
Mm-hmm.
And who are now operating in Kosovo freely because there is virtually no border to separate Kosovo from Albania.
What do Albanian people, do you have any friends who are Albanian?
I used to have, I haven't been in touch with any of them for years now, years before this whole thing happened. But I can tell you that from what they had, their participation in governing the Kosovo, they were excluded on their own. They just didn't want to participate in any governing. And that's what they tried to present as being actually pushed out. But that's a whole another story.
What about now? How? I mean, of course, you haven't been in touch with them, but if you have been studying news reports. How does the average Albanian regard, I should say the average Albanian Yugoslavian regard the current situation in Kosovo? Are they, do they like the government? Do they not like the government?
Well, I think that the latest numbers of Albanian population leaving Kosovo and actually going to Serbia talks for itself. I mean, there is there was Ramsey Clark, a former U.S. Attorney General. He had organized a little tour of Yugoslavia, and they interviewed tens of thousands of those Albanian refugees from Kosovo. And I think that would be also a great thing to look at.
But these are Albanian refugees who went to Serbia or went to Albania?
Who went to Serbia.
Uh-huh.
They escaped Kosovo because they do not agree, or they were personally attacked by the current leadership.
Is this Albanians who were cooperating with the Serbian government previously and maybe
Not necessarily. Right. Those were just a regular, ordinary people. Most of them are farmers. And I had no contact whatsoever with neither side.
How are they being treated in Serbia now? Is there a reverse action? Are Serbians angry with the Albanians?
For what I know, most of the Albanians still have their shops, and that's all operating. There was a few isolated incidents, maybe a handful of them, in which, of course, the people were provoked during the NATO bombing.
What about now? Let's say the last 2 months. You say there have been Albanian refugees moving into Serbia. What's the reaction of the Serbian population to these Albanian refugees? I mean, often people resent refugees generally because they take up space. They're they speak a different language in some cases. I mean, for example, when Turk immigrants come into Germany, they're targeted by right-wing parties. What's happening to Albanian refugees coming into Serbia?
Well, they're being generally accepted in the same refugee centers as the Serbs. Unfortunately, Yugoslavia and its economic situation is so bad at this time that they're not able to really do anything for them other than maybe give them some kind of temporary shelters. But coming this winter, there are going to be really big problems for general population, not just refugees.
That's what we were reading about, yeah.
Because
no gas, no oil.
Yeah, electrical systems are shot. Even though NATO didn't bomb the actual power plants, the distribution system is destroyed, so they cannot deliver that electricity. And
we have about 2 minutes left. I'm going to let you just sum up and also give a number where people can get more information if you can.
Well, I would say the best information is what you can find on the web, because in most cases it's not filtered.
www.belgrade.com.
That is correct. Another site is that could be interesting. It would be an International Action Center website.
And that website is?
That would be www.iacenter.com.
Mm-hmm. www.iacenter.com.
Mm-hmm. And just one thing, as far as the first website, the Belgrade, it's spelled in Serbian, so it's instead of Belgrade, it's Belgrade, which is B-E-O-G-R-A-D.
One more time.
www.beograd.com.
So
yeah.
It looks like Beograd.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the way it is.
And your name again is?
My name is Sveto, and
Sveto?
I'll be happy to give you an update on Sundays during your program. So
sure. Or you can call in at other times as well. There are other free radio broadcasters who would be happy to get updates as well. And do you want to leave a number for people if they want to reach you to get more information if they don't have access to the internet?
Well, not at this time, but...
Let me give my number then. I'll give my number. In the event people are interested in getting in touch with you, I can give you their number, and then perhaps you can choose to get in touch with them. And that number, for those of you who want to get in touch with more information about Yugoslavia, is 423-4833, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F. Again, I want to thank you for calling in, and we'll be looking forward to your next update. We also have a show on Thursday from 6 to 8, in case you want to call. And much thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm. trucks parking by the Union City.
We have so little time left, we're going to go directly to this very interesting tape that I made the evening of the Mumia protest here in Santa Cruz a couple days ago, and the death warrant was signed on Thursday night when folks returned to the town clock after marching around the town. And you'll get to hear first a description of that, and then you'll hear a debate with some white separatists who arrived, which I found very interesting. We may not have time for all of it. If so, we'll finish it up on Thursday when the show resumes from 6 to 8 in the evening. You're tuned, of course, to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And here we go.
What happened? Hey. Stephanie, give us the dope on how it went.
It was great. It was really great. We started off here and started off really strong. Had a lot of great speakers. And we marched straight down. We marched straight down Pacific. Didn't have any problems. We did have some run-ins with some skinheads early on that sort of joined into the ranks and were trying to intimidate people. But it wasn't a problem. They broke off. We marched down Laurel. Marched all the way down Mission Street and kept on going on the Highway 1. And we sat down right in the middle of the intersection of Highway 1 in the North Pacific here. Sat down in the middle block of traffic.
How many of you were there?
There was a lot. I'd say there was about 200 people. More energy than I've ever felt at any of the other marches here. It was really great, really supportive people. We had more of the fascists and things yelling at us when we were sitting down. No one really paid any attention to them. Kept it really positive. Didn't have any serious problems from the police, and we waited out the intersection for about 15 minutes. Kept it going. Everybody decided we wanted to break up, come back here instead of risking the arrest. Things have been great. Things have been powerful. A lot of flyers, a lot of people came out and listened to us and heard what we had to say.
And you are?
I'm Bo Norsha.
Bo, thank you very much. What can people do if they want to get further information?
Definitely call the Rise Zone and the Info Center at 425-4467. Find out anything you want on Mumia and lots of other social causes.
Thank you, Bo.
It's very short and sweet.
Hey, Dan, what's the story?
Well, I just want to tell you that today on the news they said they arrested a guy named Ryan, who was one of the persons that was responsible for beating up the two Mexican people. Oh, you already know about that, Steve?
Yeah.
Oh, do you?
Any details?
Just what I saw in the Sentinel. It said that the charges had been dropped on two of the people that they caught with that Neary Lagoon beating, but two other people they still have charges pending, and then they caught it. They're saying they caught a third person, this guy named Ryan. Yeah.
You know, Aaron Birch has been convicted. You know about that, right?
He's been convicted.
He's been tried and convicted, or he's pled guilty and been convicted.
He was at the protest today handing out Nazi literature.
Well, naturally.
And saying, talking about frying Mumia. So,
always the dissenter, that Aaron Birch.
So he's been sentenced, but I guess he's got, they're giving him a little time to get his things in order.
Right, I don't even know if it was given a jury trial, because the police did not inform Ken Cole or anyone else about his trial or court dates. I went and actually looked for his court dates. I probably should have kept closer track of him. So, anything else of news? What do you think of all this?
About what?
I'm not sure. The situation here.
I'd like to tell you about the march.
Tell me about the march.
Yeah. The march was really fantastic. We went through the mall, then we went down Laurel, and up the hill to Mission, and then down Mission, and then we took over Highway 1, and we marched all right down the highway, and then we took it over completely, and then we went down to River Street and Highway 1, and we sat down right in the middle of the freeway, and about 200 people, and we all sat down, and no one would get up, and we were just chanting, and the cops were around us, and then they got irritated after about 10 or 15 minutes, so then they turned their sirens on, probably to drown us out or something, but it didn't drown them out, you know, and then they told us they called the Highway Patrol. So then everybody decided, they asked if everybody wanted to just stay there and get arrested or whatever, or wait till the Highway Patrol came. And most of the people actually wanted to stay, you know. But then, I guess, because we all wanted to meet at the clock tower together, everybody got up and marched after about 15 minutes. No. After about 15 minutes. I mean, the people were willing to be arrested, but then they wanted to be here, too, because it was such a powerful thing. But I was kind of, if everybody else wanted to get arrested, I was definitely going to get arrested, too, you know.
Yeah. You needed affinity groups, is what you needed.
If somebody would have really, really pressed it, the people would have stayed there and got arrested, I'm sure. Yeah.
Thank you,
so
Dan.
It was really great.
Any female perspective on this situation?
Well, it was rather intense. I mean, I think it was a good gathering of a whole bunch of different types of people together for one cause. It was really, really good in that sense.
I felt that we kept our focus really well, you know, within safety issues and then issues, you know, in keeping peace with the Nazis that showed up there, which is like a really hard thing to do.
How many Nazis were there?
Like five or six, maybe.
It was really scary.
Bring the car back?
It was like, I don't know, it's hard to believe that people like that, you know, but... People can have those types of views, I suppose. That's what I'm trying to think.
Take the movie Blood in the Face out of the video library. It's a documentary about about California Nazis. It's very interesting.
I'm from an area where there are a lot of, like, Huntington Beach used to be like the capitals, and I don't know if it still is, but that's like right around where I'm from. So they scare me. Like, I know it's like I shouldn't let them scare, but they do. I just kind of steer clear of them when I see them. It's like go to the other side of the road or whatever.
Bigot. Just kidding.
Well, you know, I'm not exactly like the palest person, and you know, it's kind of like, I don't know what they would do.
We have plans for you.
I know.
We have a nice, clean place for you to shower.
I don't want to take a shower.
No thanks. Your name is?
Karen.
And you are?
Briar.
Karen. Thank you.
I'm standing on to that land I'm standing on. I enjoy sharing it with everybody.
Do you enjoy sharing it with me?
And now, there's an abrupt break, and we enter a period where you hear Nassim Zarifi, who is one of the Santa Cruz Five, debating with Jeff, who I believe describes himself as a national socialist, if I'm not mistaken. And this is quite a heated discussion. Jeff is standing with a female companion, both of them dressed in black, I believe, and they were surrounded by, one would have to say, a hostile crowd. And Nassim, well, you'll hear it now, the debate between a member of the Santa Cruz Five and a self-declared, and I believe it's fair to say, certainly a white separatist, perhaps a self-declared national socialist, and a local person as well.
Yeah, actually, right now I said I'm enjoying sharing it.
Okay, but what if I told you I wanted to kill you? Would you enjoy sharing it with me?
Well, I'd have a serious problem with that. But why would I have a problem with that? You gotta be kidding me.
Because he wouldn't want to die.
It's really, if you tell me you want to kill me and you think I'm not gonna have a problem with that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Speaking of killing people,
I know. It's not very making sense.
I'm sure you guys saw me standing down there.
Okay. See, you seem like a really nice guy. I'm talking to you. You don't seem like I don't know. You seem like a nice guy.
Okay, well, why do you think
right
why is it your interpretation that skinheads are evil and bad?
Oh, it's not my interpretation.
It's
if you
not.
Have a shaved head, I mean, there's skinheads against racial prejudice. There's skinheads for this and that. And I don't have a problem if you have a shaved head. I used to have a shaved head too. I used to have long hair, now I got hair this length. Actually, I need a haircut, and I'm planning to go today, but I got cut up in other
stuff. What I'm talking about is people in your own little group here were threatening violence against me when I was standing there, and I did...
That's what I was trying to stop.
Nothing to anybody, okay?
Well, that's what I was trying to stop. I'm sorry that people threatened violence against you, and I actually went over there to try and defuse the situation, because I don't like two sides getting antagonistic. Now, some people say you have the right to think what you want to think, but you don't have the right to take any actions against other people. Some people think...
Don't talk about some people. Talk about what you think.
Okay, I was just going to bring that up in general thing. What I think is that I think that racism is based on ignorance, because if you look at certain facts, whether they be scientific, whether they be cultural, whatever they may be, you'll see that whatever... beliefs you have that are racist will probably be disproven. I'd love to sit down at a table with you and you could say whites are superior genetically to blacks, and I'll say, look, there's very, very little difference. There's black people who have done the same things as white people. A lot of the inventions we use were invented by black people. A lot of the you know, the front line on the wars America has fought has been black people, a lot of them. They, you know, there's been great thinkers, philosophers, theoreticians, scientists who are black people. So obviously they can't be true if they're not intelligent. You know, you might say, oh, Jews are trying to take over the world, I could say. Well, no, if you look at actually who's owning all the major institutions, you can see that the majority of them are not Jewish. You can see that there is no Zionist conspiracy to take over the world.
I never said there was.
I know, I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying some other things.
But see, what you're going off on right now is a prejudicial view that you have of me because of things you've heard on the news or in the newspaper.
You don't believe that whites are superior?
Huh?
You don't believe that whites are superior to other races?
I believe everybody is superior in their own different way, and I don't believe we should all live together.
Yay, diversity. Oh, well, why not?
Why not? Because when you have everybody mixing together, diversity will eventually end.
Oh, no, well, diversity won't. You know what? Diversity will never end.
Well, you guys are all walking around screaming,
you know,